You're listening to the Refined Hippie Podcast. I am your host, Rebecca Henson, and welcome to another episode. Today's episode is being posted a little bit later than usual. Yesterday, I was traveling and was in the airport, and Mondays are normally my day that I am getting everything uploaded and planned out and ready to be put out there on all the platforms. So I wasn't able to do that. And then when I got home, I was super exhausted. So it's just a little bit late. It's also a little bit late because, well, today our internet in South Carolina has been out for half the day and it's still out and it's kind of late in the evening right now. So fingers crossed that I even get to post this tonight. Yeah, so that's been a thing. My husband and I were in Austin, Texas this weekend visiting some friends, and it was super amazing. If you've been to Austin, then you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't been there, then you should definitely put it on your list. I highly recommend. There's a really big plant-based vegan scene there, so we ate some insanely delicious food, of course. We spent a lot of time outside. We went to Barton Creek Springs. We went on some hikes, a bunch of yoga classes. It was just a really nice and relaxing weekend with some really great friends. Matt and Molly were such gracious hosts. So shout out to y'all. I wish we lived closer. But anyways, so today's episode is about our culture's current obsession with protein. Are you getting enough? Where are you getting your protein from? These are all questions and concerns from many people these days. My husband and I, when we became plant-based vegan, we definitely realized how big this protein craze was and is, because they are common questions that we get, especially from my husband. He is 6'2". He's a very active windsurfer and surfer and just an all-around athlete. So I think when people find out that I'm a plant-based vegan, they're maybe not as, I don't know, not as impressed or that curious about it, because I'm very petite. I am small. So I don't know, maybe in their minds, they're just kind of like, you know, no wonder you're a vegan. You're so tiny. But for him, they're like, what? They're much more curious and have a lot more questions, you know, curious about where he is, where he's getting his protein from. So I think the word plant-based and vegan is definitely being talked about more, and then people maybe are more inquisitive, but it is a new thing. The current paradigm has been that we need animal flesh. This has been our culture's view for quite some time, but that is shifting, which I couldn't be happier about. However, we are still in the midst of a protein addiction, so I'm not going to get ahead of myself because I know it's going to take time. This is a trend similar to the low-fat diet of the 90s, which you might remember, or the margarine craze in the mid-century. Protein addiction and concern for it has been fueled by marketing, advertising, and of course, big animal agriculture. So today on the podcast, we're going to chat about how much protein we actually need and what happens when we get too much, the differences between different proteins, and what is a clean protein. Protein is absolutely necessary for human life, along with other macronutrients like carbs and fats. It is the building blocks of cells and tissue. Proteins are complex molecules comprised of a combination of 22 naturally occurring amino acids. So amino acids are thought to be the building blocks of protein. And protein has, there are essential amino acids that we need. That means that our body cannot make them ourselves. So we have to get them from outside sources. But other animals don't make them either. All essential amino acids come from their diets. So before I get into how much protein we need, let's talk about protein deficiency. Have you ever met anybody who's been protein deficient? I haven't. That's because protein deficiency in a first world country is not a thing. This is not a thing, y'all. This is generally only seen in third world countries where people are actually starving. They are malnourished and deficient in everything, not just protein. They are not getting enough vitamins, minerals, carbs, fats, water. So again, if you are listening to this podcast, if you're getting enough protein, should not be a concern for you. So like I said, along with water, carbs, fats, protein is absolutely essential for human life. It's building blocks of cells and tissues. But the World Health Organization says we need between 40 to 60 grams per day. A lot of times people, I think, are surprised by this. And again, this goes back to all the advertising and marketing that you see nowadays with, you know, every time you go in the grocery store, everything that's boxed or processed has in big bold letters and numbers how much protein it has in it. So we really are under this assumption that more is better. But like I said, 40 to 60 grams, World Health Organization. Another way to calculate it is it's 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. But for those of us in the pounds world, you calculate your body weight in pounds times 0.36, and that will equal your recommended protein intake in grams. If you are a woman and you're pregnant or lactating, then you do require a bit more, around 25 grams. And infants should get around 1.52 grams per kilogram of body weight. And if you are trying to calculate your body weight in pounds from kilograms, it is 1 kilogram equals 2.2 pounds. So just in case. If you are past a growth phase, which you probably are, if you're listening to this, you are an adult, then you are in what's called a maintenance phase. This phase is when you have stopped growing physically and you are just trying to maintain your body weight. So, yeah, you're not growing upwards anymore, people. You will be growing outwards, and most of us do not want that. So an excess of protein. People are more likely to suffer from protein excess in this country than deficiency. Most Americans are getting 2 to 3 times too much protein, and it's usually coming in high and saturated fat, low fiber animal products. The adverse effects include increased risk of cancer, diabetes, bone and calcium problems, liver disorders, autoimmune disease, cardiovascular disease, arthritis. All of these can be associated with an overconsumption of protein from meat and dairy. So this is not good. This is really not good. And our intake of animal flesh has increased like crazy in the past 50 years. In the 1950s, the average American ate around 130 pounds of meat every year. Today, the average American eats over 200 pounds of animal flesh every year. Fat consumption has shot up by 2/3 over that same period. Fast food restaurants make up 11% of average Americans' diets. I mean, this is crazy. Obesity has gone up from, in the 1960s, it was around 13%. Now it's over 35%. And we actually have double that of people who are just overweight. So this is really terrible. Childhood obesity has increased 3 times as much. And our healthcare cost as a percentage of GDP has gone from 5% to 18% in the past 50 years. And we spend more on healthcare than all other countries in this whole on the whole planet. But yet we are still the sickest. We're not fixing ourselves. But the problem is in what we're eating, obviously, and people know this, but yet they still are told the wrong things and they're confused. So what happens when people are confused, they just throw up their hands and they're just like, well, whatever, I'm just gonna eat this. This is fine. But yet it's still not working for them, you know, which that's, I think, very disturbing for me to watch. So yeah, I digress. But yeah, those who do eat a large amounts of animal products have 73 times more risk of dying of all these diseases. If a person is eating a moderate amount of animal products, their risk is about 23 times more. So obviously you can see that protein, an excess of animal protein, I would think is not good. So, but why is this? So too much protein overtaxes the systems, causing them to be fatigued. Important enzymes are lost. An example is when animal protein is ingested, the pancreas is stimulated, which releases an extra large supply of digestive juices as part of the body's buffer system to balance the acid alkaline levels. More acid-causing food, the more taxed the system will become. So let's think about the largest, most powerful mammal on the planet. Like, what comes to mind first? For me, I think of definitely an elephant, and then maybe a gorilla, perhaps a rhino, a hippo, or an ox. And what do they all have in common? They all eat plants. The idea that plant protein is inferior to animal protein came from a study done on rodents over a century ago. They found that infant rats don't grow as well on plants, but infant rats didn't grow as well on human breast milk either. So does that mean we shouldn't breastfeed our babies? Obviously not. That sounds ridiculous. Rats have 10 times as much protein in their breast milk as humans do, because rats grow about 10 times faster than human babies. The most perfect food for humans with the most optimal amount of protein can be found in human breast milk. It is formulated just for us to grow at the most optimal rate. And when we look at the amount of protein in all mammal breast milk, humans have the least amount of protein of all mammals. Isn't that crazy? Less than 1% of protein by weight. Cats, rats, pigs, llamas, all of them, they have more protein in their breast milk than we do. This is why feeding straight cow's milk to babies, human babies, can be so dangerous and lead to obesity. There's also a common myth that we must combine certain plant proteins in order to get a quote unquote complete protein. So this myth literally came into vogue. And when I mean came into vogue, I mean literally the magazine. Like, there was an article in the 1970s about this topic. There was a study done, and basically that's what it was saying, that you had to combine different plants to create a complete protein, and that was the only way to do it. However, this has been long refuted years ago, but many people have not gotten this memo. But our bodies are extremely smart, y'all. They have pools of free amino acids, creating what's essentially like a protein recycling program. Our bodies can mix and match depending on what we need, making it impossible to not get the right essential amino acids if you're eating enough food. Plant-based people do not need to be concerned about this at all. And yeah, I mean, if you're getting an abundance of vegetables, beans, legumes, and whole grains, then you should not have to worry about if you're getting enough protein. Some of my favorite places to get protein, though, from would be soybeans, sesame, wheat, grains, legumes, leafy greens, beans. Did I say beans? I love beans. rice, peas, all of these are really good protein combos. But some other plants that have really high protein content would be spirulina. I absolutely love spirulina. It's one of the highest proteins per gram in the world. It's a green algae and it's considered a superfood. It's really easy to grow and it requires a lot less resources than all other protein, especially obviously animal protein, which requires a lot of water, energy, land, all of these things. So spirulina, it's amazing. Tons of protein, iron, chromium, vitamin A, B12, like all these things. I put it in my smoothie. It's amazing. Spinach. Of course, I love spinach. If you don't like spinach, you can put it in your smoothie. It does not taste. Promise. Broccoli. Always loved it. Kale. Mushrooms. Very high in protein. Also quinoa, tahini, lentils, brown rice, and of course, organic tofu. Love it. So these are some ideas for that. So a clean protein. What does a clean protein mean? Clean protein means that it is free of pesticides, antibiotics, heavy metals. All of these things are important when choosing a protein. So you might know that animal protein is often has a lot of antibiotics or hormones in it. In general, animal protein is going to cause an estrogen-like effect on the body. So this is why a lot of people who eat high amounts of animal protein will have increased risk of cancer, breast cancer especially. But the antibiotics are something very important to look at because, you know, these animals live in very deplorable situations. A lot of them are not given any daylight. They are in cramped warehouses, essentially, where they never see, like I said, the light of day. And they're in such close quarters that they would have disease. They would die if they were not pumped full of antibiotics. Hormones obviously are going to be a high thing. So if you're looking at something that says that it has low hormone, that, you know, they don't add hormones in the milk, well, milk is growth hormone liquid. So even if there's not added hormones in it, it's going to give that same effect. This is why, you know, children are going through puberty earlier. Girls are starting their periods earlier. This can all be linked to the consumption of animal products. So, environmentally speaking, when we're talking about the planet and having a clean protein, animal protein is absolutely not clean for the environment. 90% of animals raised for meat come from factory farms. In the industry, they call this a CAFO, which stands for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation. So these operations account for 18% of all greenhouse gas emissions. That is more than all transportation, planes, trains, boats, automobiles, all of these combined. And this is actually a very modest amount. So if you are actually including some of the indirect aspects of animal agriculture, so the land use that they use for raising the feed for animals, the deforestation, all of these kind of things, the indirect, more indirect aspects of it, then that number is actually thought to be more around 50%. So, but these animal agriculture farms, if you will, decimate the soil, millions of acres of forest are demolished, and vital ecosystems are destroyed. Shockingly, 95% of rainforest destruction, 40% of water usage, and 50% of the ocean acidification can be attributed to animal agriculture. So these are really crazy numbers. Over 30% of the Earth's landmass is used for raising animals for food. A staggering 80% in the United States of agricultural land is used to grow these animals as food, as well as the grain to feed them. So imagine if we were using all of that land that we're growing food to feed these animals. If we were growing it to grow our own nutrient-dense plant proteins, how much better would that be? You know, obviously on the moral side of this, I can't imagine a cleaner protein than not having to kill a living being, right? I mean, if we can live and thrive and be healthier with less disease by eating plant protein, well, why in the heck would we not want to do that? You know, when we look at meat consumption and countries around the world, it is clear that the countries with the highest rates of disease eat the most amount of animal products, while the countries with the least disease and are on very little drugs and have the most centenarians, so those are people that live to be 100 or more, they eat very little meat. Their diets consist mostly of plants. This information came about from an elaborate study that is called the Blue Zones, which you might have heard of this. If you haven't, you should certainly look it up. So the Blue Zones were this study that basically found all of these places in the world that had the most people who lived to be 100 or more and that had the least amount of the disease. And they were like, what are these people doing? We need to figure this out. So they went, they studied them for years and years and years. And what they found nutritionally was that they eat mostly plants. If they did eat any type of meat, it was very minimal for some type of special occasion. It was extremely fresh if it was meat, and often like from the sea or whatnot. But they did not eat very much meat. Like 5% was the most that any of these cultures ate. And actually, the 7-day Adventists, is that how you call it? I don't know. They don't eat meat at all. So when you look at this and you're just, I mean, how can you discount this information? You know, the China study is also one of the most elaborate studies. It was over 25 years long. And this also showed that high animal flesh diet resulted in an increase in disease. So if you are concerned about, if you're still concerned about protein now, then I don't know what to tell you. It is something that I think is changing, hopefully. I do think that there's a lot more people out there spreading their message about plant-based nutrition or protein. Although we do still have these fad diets like the keto or paleo diets, which I certainly think are not healthy. And I think in the future, in the next 10 years, we're going to see some really bad adverse effects of people living those lifestyles. But if you're more curious about learning about plant protein, I certainly suggest reading the China Study. That's a really great book. Also, look into the Blue Zones. There's a wealth of information there about it. I also have done a blog post on this subject because it's obviously been a big topic in my studies through the years. I have studied at the Canadian School of Natural Nutrition. I also did the plant-based nutrition program at Cornell University with T. Colin Campbell. And I have spent, I don't even know, 1,000 hours on my own studying about this. So if you have any questions, obviously reach out. I would love to help you formulate a meal plan if you are confused about what to eat or how to, you know, change your ways, because I totally understand that this is, it's a new frontier, you know? I mean, I didn't change overnight. This was totally a gradual process of me learning or relearning how to cook and how to change, you know, certain things. But, you know, like for dairy, it's really easy, I feel like, these days. You know, if you normally put cream in something, like let's say you're making a soup, you put coconut milk. It makes it so creamy and it doesn't taste like coconut. Also cashews. I talk about this a lot. Cashews are amazing for making things creamy and they can be used for savory or sweet things. But like I said before, some of my favorite plant proteins are probably quinoa, tahini. I'm super obsessed with lentils. Love, love, love. And spirulina. I have spirulina every single day. And I just love it. So sorry that this episode is being posted a little bit late. I hopefully will not be doing this very often, but traveling makes it difficult. I had actually planned on having a guest on this episode, but they had to reschedule. So that will be hopefully coming in the next few weeks. But I had wanted to talk about protein anyways, so it made a good opportunity for it. So I hope you enjoyed it. If you don't mind or want to, I guess, subscribe to my podcast, that would be awesome. Also, perhaps maybe leave a review if you liked it. That helps with SEO and helps other people find the podcast who are interested in, you know, nutrition, plant-based health, all those things. So thank you so much. Like, share, subscribe, all the things. If you have questions, please email me at Rebecca@therefinedhippie.com. You can DM me on Instagram @therefinedhippie. And until next time, my friends, peace and plants.